When it comes to biscuits, Erica Council doesn't play around. And if you want proof, all you have to do is ask her about the man that she stopped dating because he was, how shall I put this? Let's call him ill-informed about the power of the biscuit.
He was a handsome man that I dated very, very long time ago. Very much in shape, dark skin, chocolate, from up north, as in New York, New Jersey, I think. I can't even remember. And I just thought the relationship was like, wow, this is great. I mean, you know, he's great when he should be. So I made breakfast one morning, and, you know, he just was like, you know, he didn't know what biscuits were, really. He didn't really know what it was. And he's like, oh, I don't really eat breakfast like that. You know, I don't really eat rolls or dinner rolls for breakfast. And that just kind of ended the relationship because, like, we can't even vibe off of breakfast, and I know we won't vibe on anything else.
For Erica Council, a biscuit is never just bread. The biscuit is an inheritance. It is a test. Erica Council's biscuits are two grandmothers, a church kitchen, a history this country would just as soon forget, and for 3 years running now, the only biscuit in the world that merits a spot in the Michelin Guide. I'm Chuck Reese, and this is Salvation South Deluxe, where we try to unravel the tangled stories of a complicated place called the American South. I visit Erica Council's place in Atlanta, Bomb Biscuit Company, about as often as I can find a reason to. It's the kind of place you walk into hungry and walk out of changed. I asked Erica what she wants it to feel like when she opens the door of the Bomb every morning.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of thoughts going through my head in the morning. But just for a general consumer, I hope you're thinking about how hungry you are and can't wait to eat biscuits. When you walk in, the scents obviously are baking biscuits, fried chicken, bacon, sizzling. You can smell all that sort of how you walk in. Yeah, I mean, it's just sort of try to make it as bright and cheery. And you walk in, you sort of see some family photos on the wall and just come in ready to eat.
Smells like kitchens that I grew up going to.
Mine too. It smells like my grandma's kitchen on a Sunday morning for sure.
Which grandma, I asked. Because there are two of them in this story, and Erica grew up with them both. One of them you may already know. The other one, if I do my job right today, you'll never forget. I'm curious, what did Mildred teach you that Geraldine couldn't have? Vice versa.
There is nothing that Mildred could teach me Geraldine couldn't. Geraldine ran the church kitchen, so I kind of just sort of look at that in parallel, because even though Granny didn't have a restaurant, she definitely was that quintessential church kitchen lady. And not just her, all the women that worked in the church kitchens. When people ask me kind of what were my biggest influences, I always mention, you know, the church ladies of St. James, Amy Zion Church in Goldsboro, North Carolina, because they fed everybody. There was no money exchanged. You know, it wasn't anything. It was just this is the love we feel in our heart. This is where you come. This is 70s, 80s, you know, 90s. Like, no one was turned away. On Thursdays, it was the soup kitchen. So we got up really early in the morning and Granny went down there and so they made soup. So I think just spending so much time with her and them and all those ladies, that really sort of sparked something in me about feeding people and the way that makes people feel, whether they have nothing to offer or everything to offer.
Erica's famous grandmother was Mildred Council, the founder and owner of Mama Dip's Kitchen, an iconic country cooking spot in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, that fed folks for nearly 50 years. The other was Geraldine Dortch in Goldsboro, North Carolina, the church kitchen grandmother, the one Erica called Granny, the one she spent the most time with. And Erica will tell you plainly that when food writers write their stories, They will always include Mama Dip's name, but often leave out Granny George.
I have to always mention her because, again, like I'll say, Mildred Council was a very historic figure, Southern Foodways and the restaurant in history. So when I mention Granny or grandmother, a lot of times, even if they print an article, they'll throw, you know, the name that they know on there. And that's fine, but at the same time, I want people to know about Geraldine.
Now, here's the thing that surprises people about Erica Council. She did not come up through restaurant kitchens. She spent almost 20 years building information technology in corporate America before she ever considered opening a restaurant. When and how did the point arrive where you decided, okay, I'm going to make biscuits for my living as opposed to doing IT for my living?
Well, that was a while. I had my brick and mortar open before I said, I'm just going to walk away and only do biscuits. Like, it was 2 years into, so I officially stopped working consulting gigs in 2022.
Oh, okay. So not that long ago.
No. I said, you know, because we have bills to pay. Sometimes the restaurant business doesn't do that. And then just the brick and mortar opened, believe it or not, in 2020.
Yeah.
The little small spot. And I was still working. Like, I would get up really early in the morning, hit the restaurant. And once I left there, I would, you know, pick my son up from school, you know, make dinner, and then just get ready to get online. Because most IT work, you have to wait till everybody gets off the system anyway. So you're working, like I worked maybe from 5 p.m. to midnight, sometimes 1 in the morning, get up and start all over again.
She walked away from a 20-year career to get up before dawn and do, by hand, what those two women had done before her. And what she and her crew at Bomb Biscuit do is rather amazing. If you are Southern and listening to this show, I'd bet good money that you, like me, have eaten many biscuits in your lifetime. You might very well use your mama's or grandmama's recipe to make your own. But when you go to Bomb Biscuit, you are confronted not only with the classic and truly exceptional traditional buttermilk biscuits, but there are other options. Cheddar jalapeno biscuits, vegan biscuits that you will actually want to eat, gluten-free biscuits that you will also actually want to eat, and the inimitable Bo-Nuts, which are deep-fried biscuits rolled in cinnamon and sugar with cream cheese icing on top. And if you buy Erica's cookbook, you will discover recipes for about 40 more biscuit variations. Published in 2023, her cookbook's title is Still We Rise. And that title is a double entendre. And if you can't guess why, stick around. And after this break, you will figure it out as we talk to Erica about what the biscuit really carries, which is a lot more than just sausage or bacon or homemade peach jelly. We will also talk about the weight that Erica herself refuses to carry. We'll be right back. There is a page in Erica's book, Still We Rise, that I can't stop thinking about. A page about the generations of black women who pioneered Southern food, whose names were erased from the history of our region's cooking. Because they were black, because they were enslaved, and because they were registered in the U.S. Census until the Emancipation Proclamation, not as people, but as property. The biscuit, you see, that simple symbol of Southern hospitality, butts up against some of the ugliest history this region has. Before baking soda and baking powder came along in the mid-1800s, the only way to get air into biscuit dough was to beat the dough with a mallet, an axe handle, whatever you had for what felt like forever. And in the antebellum South, that labor was always extracted from enslaved people, often from enslaved children. Back in those days, in the antebellum days, a biscuit at breakfast was, because of the labor it required, was a symbol. It was sort of an edible advertisement for, you know, the planter who could put those things on his breakfast table. Mm-hmm. It was like an edible advertisement of the fact that he owned enough people to make that biscuit. So I asked Erica how she carries all that, the history she was taught, the history she's learned, into a kitchen where she's the one making the biscuits and she is the one being celebrated for it. And her answer was not the one I expected.
I mean, that's not my weight to carry. That's more on y'all to carry, to be honest. I don't carry the weight of things of that nature.
By y'all, she means white folks like me.
I carry the weight of so much other things, so many other things of being a woman, one, a business owner who is a woman, and a black woman. I have a 14-year-old son and a 25-year-old daughter. So, I mean, the weight that I carry is making sure that they understand how the laws are designed, you know, in regards to history and the plight of African Americans and our quest for equality, which we have not received yet. My weight is more carrying how to make sure they know how to maneuver in this world. So, I mean, in regards to, you know, coming back to biscuits, I don't carry the weight of the history of what it took to get those biscuits to the table, because the weight right now is just so much more profound than that. And, you know, as a black woman, I have to sort of, you know, juggle the amount of weight I can carry so that that weight doesn't kill me from the stress of carrying it.
The weight Erica does carry is the weight of right now, today. The banks, the property, the world her kids will inherit. And that led us to the idea at the very center of everything she does. It came from her mother, Renita. It's the difference between two words, hidden and erased. In her cookbook, Erica Council relates a story about sharing an article with her mom, Renita Dortch, that asked if the black women who pioneered Southern food were, quote, hidden figures, close quote, a reference to the mid-teens book and film about the black women mathematicians who worked at NASA and played key roles in the dawn of the space program. Erica writes, she bristled at the title, asking, were they hidden or erased?
Were we hidden or erased? So, like, that part, that came from my mom. Like, as I say in the story, like, I was just so excited to tell her about a story. And it just kind of, you know, because it was like Hidden Figures. I think that was the movie.
Yeah, right,
and that,
right.
Just, the name of that just rattled her. So there was nothing hidden about them, you know. So she's always very quick to get someone together when they want to say, oh, this was a hidden figure. Of she wasn't hidden. She was there every day. She was a living, breathing person. They didn't hide her. They erased her or him from the stories. So that's my mom.
Erased from the stories. Keep that word in your pocket for a minute, because the world has lately started trying to write Erica Council back into the story in the most improbable way. I have the Michelin Guide app on my phone.
Yeah.
And
that's crazy.
Open the app up.
Yeah.
And search for the word biscuit.
I know.
You're the only thing that comes up.
That is really something I still cannot comprehend. And I have a funny story about the Michelin. When they first came and they sort of sent an email, I guess, to a lot of restaurants, like for the gala. You know, you didn't know you had been selected. Nothing. It was just like, hey, we're having this gala. And so my husband, you know, he sits at his desk. He works in IT, so he helps sort of filter the emails. And he said, you know, Michelin is emailing about something. And he's like, I'm not sure why, because, you know, we don't have Michelin tires. Like, we don't use any Goodyear. But it's just been phenomenal to receive such a high level of recognition. I mean, when I thought about the Michelin Guide, I think about, like, Thomas Keller and, you know, just things that I would never have been on the spectrum for. So to be recognized by them 3 years in a row has been, I cannot be more grateful and thankful for that.
3 years running, the only biscuit in the Michelin Guide. And it mattered to her, not for the trophy, but because for years she'd been telling people that biscuits made with love are not easy.
You know, it really did validate for me, because I went so many years of people complaining, oh, well, we close at 2 and they come at 1:55 and there are no cheddar jalapeno biscuits left. And like explaining to people, none of these are frozen. Like, when you're not breaking them out of a bag, like there are people hand rolling these biscuits every single day. The fried chicken is brined, it's cut up and brined in buttermilk that's locally churned here in Atlanta. Because it's like, I'm just making biscuits and gravy. I always say that. But then, you know, some people are like, no, you're making grandma's biscuits and gravy, which is different. It's not Bisquick. So it really did sort of validate for me to continue in the on the way I am. And if people just don't want to wait, they don't want to wait.
But recognition and erasure, it turns out, can sometimes sit at the very same table. That hidden or erased page of Erica's cookbook also includes a story about the night she was the only black person in the room at a food event, and the owner of the restaurant she was in came out to talk to her.
We had some mutual friends sitting at the table when that happened to me. I was the only black person there, but they were more angry and upset than I was. Having a white man tell me, hey, you want to come meet the black lady in my restaurant that makes all the food? I mean, my response to him was, okay, well, that's why it tastes so well. Like, I have perfected the art of not losing my cool, because, you know, as a black woman, you're not able to lose your cool without being called certain things or treated a certain way.
And even Erica Council's triumph carries with it a story of how Southern society and commerce still pushes black people from their rightful places. Bomb Biscuit's first bricks and mortar location was in the Old Fourth Ward, a historically black neighborhood in Atlanta, but her restaurant is not there anymore.
Racism still plays a role in ownership of property. I mean, I won't go on a tangent of that, but that building was sold and not to us.
Yes.
So, I mean, yeah, that's where I was, but I'm not there anymore. It wasn't necessarily by choice, even though they would tell you it was my choice, but it was either stay and, you know, be unaffordable as far as paying the rent and all the things, or leave.
You can stay, but here's what it'll cost you.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So here is the whole truth in one breath, or maybe two. The only biscuit in the Michelin Guide belongs to a woman who's priced out of the historically black neighborhood where she began. Both things are true at once. That's the South. And so, near the end of our conversation, I asked her, if a listener takes just one name away from this hour, one cook, one baker, one person from your family, who should it be and what should they know?
Geraldine Dortch. I want people to know about Geraldine because she was just such a phenomenal human, and not just my life, but so many. If you go to Goldsboro, North Carolina, you stand in the middle of the city, downtown. Geraldine Dortch, I love. Somebody's going to turn around and say, yeah, she taught me in the fifth grade. I think the takeaway is that there is a person in someone's family, from the African-American standpoint, there was a granny or an auntie or a cousin who really did or was may have been a part of some phenomenal pieces of history. There are people doing phenomenal things every day all over that get no recognition, no acclaim, nothing, but have this sort of foothold in community that just lives with so many people and have left behind a legacy that they indirectly didn't even know they were shaping with so many people.
Geraldine Dortch. Say it once, out loud. There are photographs of Erica's family on the walls at Bomb Biscuit, and their names are on the menu. Geraldine's hash and eggs, which is two eggs on top of roasted potatoes with a biscuit. One of my favorites is Uncle Bobby's breakfast, a couple of pan-fried salmon patties served with eggs and grits and a biscuit. Of course, Uncle Bobby called them salmon patties, just like my own father did when he made them for breakfast on Sundays. I asked Erica whether people walk out of her place carrying a little bit of the Council and Dortch families with them.
I do. I think a lot of people ask about the pictures on the wall. So when they leave, there's menu items, Geraldine's hash and eggs, and they'll ask me why I named it that. The Uncle Bobby's is the salmon patties. So she used to take her brother Bobby breakfast, and she would take him fish on Fridays. Because Jesus said so, got to eat fish on Fridays. So she would open a can of salmon Q and put it in there with the grits, take it down there. And they would argue because he wanted crispy salmon patties. She said, we don't have no teeth. You always arguing with me, you don't have no teeth, you can't eat it this way. How compassionate that is and how much of that's missing. Like, you know, you just get up in the morning, and I'm going to make breakfast. I'm going to take him breakfast. I'm going about my day. So, like, that shaped me in a way. Like, if something's wrong with my neighbor, okay, I'm going to get up and take him breakfast.
Compassion like that should never require a check of somebody's skin color at the door. Erica told me about a morning when an older white gentleman visiting Atlanta from Alabama sat down and asked for something that wasn't on the Bomb Biscuit menu.
There was a gentleman that came in, and he was visiting from Alabama, an older white gentleman, and he ordered country ham. He said, well, do you have any red eye gravy? He asked the server, who's very young and didn't know what red eye gravy was, and I just made it for him. So I walked over there after, I mean, we had to cook the country ham anyway. So yeah. When I took it over there to him, he's like, you made me some gravy. And we probably talked for about 20 minutes just about, you know, I would talk about my granddaddy. He eat red eye gravy with his butter egg, which is a sunny side up egg that ran that looked like butter.
Right.
And his granddaddy did the same thing.
Now, if you, like that young server, do not know what red eye gravy is, it's very simple. Fry up some country ham, and when it's done, take the ham out of the pan and deglaze it with a cup of strong black coffee. And when you pour it out of the pan into a bowl, the ham grease will pool up. Looks like a red eye in a field of black.
You know what I mean? So, like, this is completely different traditions and people and lives and races. But we connected, you know, and we had this conversation about that. So, you know, I think I like that when people come into a restaurant, how we can connect over those things.
Different traditions, different people, different lives, different races, connected over a simple gravy that neither of their grandfathers would have thought twice about. But that's the thing a biscuit can do that a history book sometimes can't. It can refuse to let anyone be erased. Erica Council carries two grandmothers into her kitchen every morning, Mildred, Mama Dip Council, and Geraldine, Granny Dortch. You might have known Mama Dip's name before you heard this episode. But now you also know about Erica Council's granny, Geraldine Dortch, and how her granddaughter keeps her spirit very much alive every Wednesday through Sunday from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. in Atlanta, Georgia. Thank you to Erica Council of Bomb Biscuit Company in Atlanta for her time, her food, and her candor. We also wish to thank her cousin Victoria, her husband Charles, and all the other good people we see every time we visit the Bomb. And we hope that we have, in some small way, honored those ancestors, Geraldine Dortch and Mildred Council, and Uncle Bobby, who evidently liked crispy salmon patties as much as my daddy did. You've been listening to Salvation South Deluxe, produced in cooperation with Georgia Public Broadcasting and its network of stations around our state. Our producer is Miranda Hawkins. GPB's director of podcasts is Jeremy Powell. Our audio engineer for this episode was Victoria Evans Cash. I also want to offer our gratitude to GPB's president and CEO, Bert Wesley Huffman, and senior vice president for content, Sandy Malcolm. They support Salvation South's mission to give voice to the many untold stories of our region, and we appreciate it so much. You can always find us and a whole lot more stories about this complicated region at salvationsouth.com. I'm Chuck Reese, and we will be back next month with another deep dive into the secrets and delights of the American South.